Welcome to The Expert Vet. I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host, Dr. Donna Spector, who is The Expert Vet. She's a board-certified veterinary internist here to help explain medical conditions in dogs and cats. If you have a problem that's been difficult to diagnose or treat, Dr. Donna can give a second opinion to help you and your vet keep your pets healthy. Email your questions to radiopetlady@gmail.com. The Expert Vet is a production of 8paws LLC and Dr. Donna Spector, which are solely responsible for its content, and is brought to you by Canine Active, a safe, non-toxic pain reliever with a proprietary anti-inflammatory ingredient, Alpha-G, made of naturally occurring amino acids and homeopathic compounds known to provide pain relief in dogs without the side effects and risks of drugs. Canine Active is made in America by the company that makes Amino Active, proven safe and effective for people with pain who want to avoid ibuprofen and NSAIDs. Now there is Canine Active, an innovative formula for dogs to improve quality of life for the canine members of the family. Canine Active, proven safe and a proven pain reliever. This show is also brought to you by Halo Holistic Natural Dog and Cat Foods, which are made from real ingredients you can recognize. Can you identify what's on the label of your own dry dog food? Halo uses real meat in their kibble, no rendered byproducts, chicken meal, or chemicals. And their new grain-free recipes give you even more healthy choices for your pooch's dinner. And Donna's dream for a super low-carb canned cat food has come true. Halo's new pate-style cat food has an amazingly low 5% carbohydrates. Halo is a private company partly owned by Ellen DeGeneres, where they emphasize giving back by making donations to shelters through freekibble.com, because Halo believes less fortunate felines and canines deserve great nutrition, too. Dr. Donna, Facebook is a wonderful place for people to get in touch with each other. And one of our listeners on Facebook said, I don't think Dr. Donna has covered Cushing's disease. And I was like, oh, have you got like the rest of your life? It's a big one, right?
It's a big topic. But yes, we have not.
Okay, well then, I mean, the stage is yours. And those of you that don't know what it is, now you're going to find out. Is it uncommon or fairly common as dogs get older?
No, it's actually a fairly common disorder. And, it's one of these things that we talk about, an endocrine disorder, because it's an overproduction of hormones. You know, so our endocrine problems are things like thyroid, diabetes, and Cushing's. And those are they're the big three. You know, I mean, they're not uncommon. I diagnose dogs with this every week, it seems like.
Wow.
But it's an interesting one, because so often with certain diseases, if you will, pets come in because they're not right. They're feeling
yes.
sick. Something's
yes.
wrong. They're losing weight or they're gaining. You know, something's just not quite right. So Cushing's is one of those crazy things, because these dogs are not sick, generally. What they're doing is they have a voracious appetite, if anything. They are getting fatter, which, of course, is like almost 100% of dogs in this country. it's true. It's a big, huge problem.
Yeah, it is. I'm laughing, but it's not funny.
But these dogs are like, they're not just hungry. They're voraciously hungry. I mean, they're the ones that are, they've been a sedentary dog, and it's like the 10, 12-year-old poodle who all of a sudden is trying to jump up onto the counter to get the bag of bread.
Wow.
They are outside eating leaves and eating dirt and eating.
Wow.
They're like crazed hungry. And at the same time, they're getting this big sort of pot belly appearance. Then they all of a sudden start to drink like mad. They drink and they pee and then they pee and they drink and they
wow.
drink and they pee and then they pee and then they drink it. And I mean, they're like, it's like everything's in overdrive. They're not sick. They're not coming in because they're vomiting or they're off their food. These dogs are like, they're like on steroids, right?
Yes.
They're like,
yes.
More. And indeed, that's exactly what's wrong with them. The disease of Cushing's is an excess of steroid.
I'll be darned.
And it's not the kind of steroid that bodybuilders take to pump you up. It's the kind of steroid that sort of breaks your body down over time.
Ooh.
But the signs of excess are the drinking, the peeing, the eating, the weight gain, the panting. They pant. Owners are like, he wakes me up in the middle of the night panting. It's the middle of February. I have no idea why. So it's everything sort of in overdrive.
Yes.
And the reason the dogs get this disease is one of two reasons. It can be coming from a gland in the brain, which is called the pituitary gland. It's a little growth. It's usually benign, a small growth on the pituitary gland, or it's a growth, which is unfortunately usually malignant, on the adrenal gland in the belly. So regardless of where the little mass is, whether it's on the adrenal gland or up in the brain, the end result is the same, that they have way too much steroid floating around in the body. It's cortisol or cortisone. You know, that's what the steroid is.
Now, would anybody confuse us and say hyperthyroid? Would they think, because they kind of think in people that are like fast and wired, and now they probably with hyper, you're not gaining weight, but I mean, how is that
so that's
different?
That's the biggest difference is that these, in dogs and in people that have hyperthyroidism, they still eat a ton and they drink a ton and they act crazy, but they're losing dramatic amounts of weight. No matter if they're eating like 3 steaks a day, they're going to lose weight. So these dogs become like the walking ottoman for the chair. You know, I mean, they're like huge, fat, belly dragging on the floor. I mean, they're huge usually.
I'm sorry to laugh, but the idea of a walking ottoman is a hoot.
Yeah. So, and you know, and then there can be other medical things. In advanced Cushing's, you know, we get like skin infections and recurrent bladder infections, and you know, and they can start to have other medical issues. But usually, now that our dogs are such a huge part of our family and like live right at the end of our beds,
yes,
we don't see Cushing's in as advanced stage as we used to.
Because people notice the differences in their dogs a lot sooner.
They notice the difference, right?
Yeah.
So the so this overproduction of cortisol or steroid, then these clinical signs come up, and so the owner usually eventually comes in, and many times we see these dogs at their annual exams, where you know it's not enough that it brings them in separately, but the owner comes in for an annual exam and they're like, wow, you know, Fluffy's really gained a lot of weight, or you know, he's drinking like crazy. Some screening blood work is done, and there will be classic changes. One of those are going to be elevated liver enzymes.
Oh boy, which we discussed recently.
Right,
so this is one of the things that it could be.
This is one of the things, and the ultrasound is helpful.
Uh-huh.
But also high cholesterol, high blood fats. They can have, you know, just different changes that are very classic of Cushing's on the blood work. So then when we combine the clinical signs that the dog is having, the fact that he's now an ottoman chair. A panting ottoman. And he has these classic blood changes, like, let's think about Cushing's. And then there are a host of screening tests for Cushing's. There are blood tests, hormonal tests that are actually checking steroid levels. And so then you say, yep, that's a confirmed test. And then the big job is to say, is it Cushing's coming from the brain, which is the pituitary?
Right.
Or is it Cushing's coming from the adrenal gland?
Right.
And that becomes very, very important, because I will tell you, the Cushing's that comes from the brain behaves a lot more benignly, if you will.
Yes.
We use medical treatment. We use medication to control the signs. Those dogs do very well. The Cushing's.
And you can't touch that growth on the pituitary gland. That's like brain surgery, right?
Right. And they do that in the Netherlands and certain countries.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but we don't do it here routinely yet.
Okay.
But then the one that comes from the adrenal gland, which is called adrenal Cushing's, that is a malignant tumor that needs to come out. And many times when you remove remove that adrenal gland, the Cushing's goes away.
Done.
All the signs, because it was coming from that mass. So that's a really important step. It's not just saying, yes, your dog has Cushing's. Then it says, yes, your dog has Cushing's, and now we have to figure, is it the brain type or is it the adrenal type? Ultrasound is a very useful tool for determining, is there a mass on the adrenal gland? I mean, that's a pretty easy thing.
Right.
We use a combination of blood tests and the ultrasound to differentiate, you know, where the Cushing's is coming from.
Now, since it's malignant, do you then do surgery, and
only the adrenal type?
Right. And then you would open the belly, and
take,
I guess, an oncological, the whole gland. You can live without it, like you can live without your spleen
You have another one.
Good for us. Paired up.
Two kidneys and two adrenals, they live right next to each other. And so even though you might remove this adrenal gland, the other one will grow and will compensate, and you'll be fully functional.
I just remembered just now, it's striking me why I feel like we've already discussed Cushing's a lot. That's what we thought my young 9-month-old Maisie might have had when I first adopted her from the rescue. When we get back from a quick break, I'm going to remind you, because you talked to me about a lot of these things in only a 9-month-old large breed puppy. So it's good to realize this is not just an old age thing. If you have a lot of these symptoms, you got to get to the heart of it right away. We'll be right back. This show is supported by Spot Platinum, an allergy test that can help pinpoint which elements in your pet's environment or diet may be causing his allergies. Is your dog or cat constantly scratching, itching, licking? He may have allergies that the Spot Platinum blood titer test can detect. and for which they can make a USDA-approved serum that is custom-tailored to your pet's specific allergy results to control his symptoms. Spot Platinum is a privately owned company that has done over 500,000 allergy tests during 25 years, a blood test that measures a pet's reaction to 90 common airborne elements in foods. Their mission is to give reliable results, effective treatment, and unparalleled customer service. For more information, visit them on the web at vetallergy.com. And support for this show also comes from VaxiCheck, a simple blood titer test done right in your vet's office to discover whether your dog is protected from the deadly core diseases or needs revaccination. VaxiCheck is useful on puppies to confirm whether their puppy shots really worked, and shelters can use VaxiCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones. VaxiCheck eliminates the need to unnecessarily revaccinate a dog whose immune system is already protected. VaxiCheck, for your dog's safety and your peace of mind. And ask your vet about the new VaxiCheck titer test for cats, too. We are back. Dr. Donna Spector is the expert vet, and that's what you're listening to. Dr. Donna, do you remember that when I got Maisie, she had an appetite so voracious it was almost frightening, like she'd been a street dog who hadn't seen food in weeks?
Yes, and but let me clarify, because I don't want to give misinformation here. We definitely did not think that she had Cushing's disease. Cushing's disease is an old age phenomena.
Good to know.
The average age is 10 to 12 years of age. It does not happen in the young population. The things that we thought Maisie were more likely to have causing her voracious appetite were the pancreas insufficiency, the, you know, some of those sorts of things. It was not Cushing's. Cushing's doesn't even enter my radar until... you know, until much later.
Okay, so what I'm remembering, and it's good for you guys listening, is that I probably did what I always tell you never to do, a little bit of Dr. Google searching, and those symptoms, some of them came up as Cushing's, because she was also, you know, very hyperactive and a lot of food stealing.
Right.
So you can look that up and go, oh my God, my dog's got Cushing's, and it's like, hello, no, the dog's 9 months, not 9 years.
Right.
So I remember now that pancreatic insufficiency was a very serious thing, because you said that's something a dog is born with, and then you have to take pancreatic supplements and manage the food. And luckily,
definitely different than Cushing's, but equally is interesting.
Okay, so this person who wrote into Facebook.
Let me just clarify as well. The good news for our dog patients is that the pituitary type of Cushing's is far more common.
Oh, good.
75 to 80% of dogs are going to have pituitary Cushing's. So, you know, only 15 to 20% are going to have the malignant adrenal mass that needs to come out. So again, if you're going with odds, odds are, and interesting, larger breed dogs tend to have adrenal Cushing's and smaller breed dogs always have pituitary. So, you know, there are, you know, we always talk about what's more likely, what's less likely, but we need to get a confirmed diagnosis, not just to say, your dog looks like a Cushingoid. They talk like a Cushingoid.
Oh, my God. They call them Cushingoids? Oh, what a great word. I love that.
And, you know, but then you do the screening blood work. Then you do the definitive testing to say, yes, Cushing's. But then you have to go one step more to say, is it adrenal or is it pituitary? Because if it's adrenal, those dogs need to go to surgery. We're not going to be doing them any favors if they're not recognized. So,
and it can be quite a successful surgery.
It can be. And the reason I'm really hounding on these points is because it's a big workup. You know, you take a dog who is healthy and, you know, relatively healthy, looking pretty good, and you're like, I just brought him in because he's like peeing in the house. I mean, what's all this?
Right.
And all of a sudden, you're $800 to $1,000 down the road with, you know, blood work and testing and Cushing's tests and ultrasound. It's a big workup. It's no small deal. And the reason we have to do that is because the treatments for Cushing's, they are fantastic, but they're not without side effects. You have to make sure you have the right diagnosis. And you have to make sure you don't have a dog who needs to go to surgery for a malignancy. So you take a dog who feels and looks pretty good, and then you're putting through this battery of tests to finally say, okay, this is the treatment we need to choose. And it can get frustrating for a pet owner going through that when you're like, okay, I just want to treat this dog. I just want so he doesn't eat me out of house and home.
Right.
You just give me the pill. What's going on?
Yes.
You know, just so everyone knows, it's a process, and it doesn't take a real long time, but there is expense associated with it. But this is one of those things, we've got to get it right, because if you don't get it right, the treatment is not without, you know, it's what I call, it's not benign. Like if you're wrong, the treatment can kill you.
And not only that, but it can kill you if you don't remove something cancerous, which would be the treatment.
So that's, you know, so that's why I stress it's, you know, it's a sort of a long haul. And Cushing's in general is not an inexpensive disease to treat. The medication tends to be somewhat pricey. I mean, not cost prohibitive, but it is pricey. The follow-ups that you have to do, you know, they're a little pricey too. So it's like, it's not an inexpensive disease to treat. And I just say that because it's another reason it would be covered by pet insurance. It's, you know, it's one of those things. It's just another great reason to, you know, to, for a common endocrine disorder that happens to have pet insurance.
I think that's an extremely good point. We, most of us think about, okay, the accident maybe, or cancer, 50% of people's dogs are going to get cancer. Not having pet insurance is not Russian roulette. It's just suicidal financially. I mean, I actually, can, you know, I'm proof of that. I used to think, oh, so many of you have suffered from cancer. I'm so sorry for you. And I'm thinking, three of my last six dogs, all different breeds and ages, all had different kinds of cancers. So it's there. But this Cushing's, I'm remembering now, a friend of my sister's adopted a dog from a shelter, and she had already lost her job and imagined that she would get another. But in this economy, you know, there's a lot of dream on about that. Or she thought, well, a mixed breed dog, I mean, how expensive can it be? I'll try and get the best quality food I can afford. She clearly didn't get pet insurance, which for a young newly adopted shelter dog could be as little as $25-$30 a month, not more than that. I mean, with a good company, and it would cover all kinds of things. And the dog was diagnosed with Cushing's, and I'm just remembering just what you're saying. She could not afford the medication. And now, for all I know, the dog may not have been even diagnosed properly, right? I mean, it's possible. Is it possible that your primary vet wouldn't be so good to know there's two kinds and they're vastly different?
No, I think veterinarians, in regards to Cushing's, I think that they are all really well versed in it at this point. We do see it a lot. And so, you know, I feel like it's not something that often gets incorrectly diagnosed, really. I mean, and they know about the pituitary and the adrenal, and they know which tests to recommend and why. Now, whether or not the clients decide to do it is a whole another story.
Right.
Not every pet owner, you know, not every pet owner can afford the ultrasound. But in my point to them is, if they can't afford the ultrasound, treatment is going to be tough.
Right. Because if you find out,
ultrasound's nothing compared to treatment follow-up.
Yes. So then, and then you're back in one of those economic euthanasia or economic suffering where you can't afford to take, you can't afford not to have pet insurance. I just have to say it over and over. I mean, I didn't understand.
You're right. It's not just the catastrophic hit by car.
That's right.
It's your dog that gets diabetes, and you want to be able to provide the best care possible. It's your dog that develops, you know, Cushing's disease, and you want to be able to treat him without being out a few thousand dollars a year. You know, I mean, it's your cat with kidney disease that needs all three check blood work and the blood pressure and the follow-up and the light food. And, you know, I mean, most of the reasons for pet insurance are not catastrophic in my mind. I mean, it helps to have that happen too, but
it's ongoing management, which involves a lot of tests and a lot of medications and a lot of doctor visits. And you can't do it half-assed. You can't do it halfway. You got to find out, and then you got to manage it.
Right.
It's really something to consider. I mean, anyone who has a dog, or maybe even has two dogs, and is thinking, there's another one I saw on Pet Finder, or I was at the PetSmart, and I saw these darling adoptable dogs, and they're so cute, and they look so healthy, and you really have to consider that there can be huge dollar outlays, leaving aside if you want to get three different choices of collar. Okay, this is really, there's some big ticket items that if you're going to add more pets to your life, you really need to add pet insurance. I don't see how people can function without it. Otherwise, you're in the rock and a hard place like this gal. Mm-hmm. And there's not much in her life but the dog. She has a husband, but if she doesn't have a job, she's under horrible financial pressure. And now every time she looks at her dog, she thinks, I can't do for you what I need to do for you.
Right.
It's pretty upsetting. We'll be back after this quick break while the rest of you quickly run to your computer and look up Embrace or Trupanion or Healthy Paws, which I happen to have. There's a lot of wonderful companies. If you're not sure about a company and you can't figure out what they don't cover, that's what you want to avoid, the ones that have a lot of stuff they don't cover. You can write to me at radiopetlady@gmail.com. I'll help you figure it out. There's a lot of good companies and a lot of ones that give pet insurance a bad name. but that doesn't mean you don't get pet insurance. We'll be right back.
This show is supported by Spot Platinum, an allergy test that can help pinpoint which elements in your pet's environment or diet may be causing his allergies. Is your dog or cat constantly scratching, itching, licking? He may have allergies that the Spot Platinum blood titer test can detect, and for which they can make a USDA-approved serum that is custom-tailored to your pet's specific allergy results to control his symptoms. Spot Platinum is a privately owned company that has done over 500,000 allergy tests during 25 years, a blood test that measures a pet's reaction to 90 common airborne elements in foods. Their mission is to give reliable results, effective treatment, and unparalleled customer service. For more information, visit them on the web at vetallergy.com. And support for this show also comes from VaxiCheck, a simple blood titer test done right in your vet's office to discover whether your dog is protected from the deadly core diseases or needs revaccination. VaxiCheck is useful on puppies to confirm whether their puppy shots really worked, and shelters can use VaxiCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones. VaxiCheck eliminates the need to unnecessarily revaccinate a dog whose immune system is already protected. VaxiCheck, for your dog's safety and your peace of mind. And ask your vet about the new VaxiCheck titer test for cats, too.
We are back. Dr. Donna, you have been working so hard over the previous months, so hard, helping the beautiful Siberian Husky Faith in California, in Southern California, to lose weight. She was one of three Siberians owned by this lovely woman who did not understand why this dog was starting to pack on pounds.
Right.
And we chose her for our Halo Healthy Weight Challenge, which is a huge amount of work for Dr. Donna. If any of you have seen her blogs on RadioPetLady.com or at halopets.com, you've seen how much effort she puts into figuring out how many calories a dog is taking in, what they weighed when they were age two, how to get the dog back down to that weight without freaking out because they're so hungry and, you know, stealing other dog's food. Let's talk about Faith's weight loss journey, because it was not a total home run. There was a lot of outs and a lot of, you know, I don't know what the baseball analogies are, but it wasn't a home right. run. But in the end, she definitely won the World Series.
Yes, indeed. Faith is, you know, that's why we call it Healthy Weight Challenge. It is not easy, as we know, once you have well-established weight gain to get the pounds off. But, you know, Faith's mom was really, really committed. And, you know, we made a lot of adjustments, a lot of changes to her food over the time to get her to lose that weight. But Faith started, so she was a Siberian Husky, started at about 68 pounds. And we know, because when you think of your average Siberian Husky, you know, the females usually, you know, weigh around 45 to 50
wow,
pounds.
Wow, really? That much less?
Yeah, that's pretty typical. You know, and she was, I took her height measurements and around her body and all those things. So we knew, you know, was she a taller than normal, a
right.
longer than normal? But she was a very average breed standard. So 68 pounds, I was like, ew, that could easily be 20 pounds of extra weight.
Wow.
You know? And, you know, once you lay your hands on them, and they're so hairy, it's so hard
yes.
to tell.
Yes.
And then, of course, I do everything remotely. So I was working with her veterinarian. And we decided, just like you do in Weight Watchers, to take it incrementally. You know, let's see how she looks at, you know, let's try to get her down to, you know, lose 10 pounds. And then let's see where she is. But the eventually, you know, with her calorie restriction, at the end of 12 weeks, which seems like a long time, you know, 3 months, it's like, you know, but she had lost 7 pounds during that time. She went from 68 pounds down to 61 pounds. You know, so a really, you know, a big percent of her body weight already. But it can, when you look at that on a weekly basis, you know, so if you kind of do the math on that, you know, 7 pounds in 12 weeks, it's less, obviously less than a pound a week, right? It's, you know, just less than a quarter pound,
right.
half pound a week. And you know, an owner can get really frustrated. They're like, oh, she's only down a half a pound. Oh,
right, right.
Down. But I'm like, stick with it. And by 12 weeks and then by 6 months, you're going to have a dog who's lost, you know, 14, 20 pounds. I mean, it's so funny because you're only dealing with a 68-pound creature. We look at ourselves, who might weigh 140,
yes.
140, 150,
yes.
200, whatever we weigh. And so we jump on the scale, and we were like, oh, we're down a pound this week. We're down 2 pounds this
right.
week, or sometimes 4 pounds this week. And but taking that onto that smaller scale, people have such a huge hard time with it. When it's like a half a pound or 0.2 pounds or 0.3 pounds, you're like, great. I look at it, I'm like, yay, You know, we're making success.
Right.
We're being successful. But, you know, so taking those small victories and realizing that 0.2 pounds and 0.5 and 0.7, they add up over a period of 10 to 12 weeks to be something really significant.
And when you're only 68 pounds, which is sort of what
right.
the leg of one average man weighs,
right.
and you're able to chip away at that in ounces, it not only does it count because incrementally it's different than weighing 268 pounds,
right.
but because as you've discovered in Weight Watchers for humans, and it's a known fact about weight loss, slow and steady is what wins the race. You don't
right.
want a rapid weight loss because sometimes that's just water weight in humans. And also
right.
it's a shock to the system. If
right.
it's slow and steady, you may actually wind up keeping it off.
Right. And the interesting thing about Faith, as we went on, Faith would go 2 weeks and sometimes three in a row and not lose a single tenth of a pound. Her owner would call and say, we're 63.4. The next week, we're 63.4. The next week, we're 63.4. I mean, it's like she would just stay, even though she wasn't cheating. She,
yes.
And then the next week, Faith would lose 2 pounds.
And that's the way her body worked.
And that's the way her body worked. She plateaued,
yes.
and then she lost, and then she would plateau for another 2 to 3 weeks, and then she would lose. And talk about an emotional roller coaster. The client was like, I'm done. I want to just be done. It's not working. This food doesn't work. And
right.
I was like, just wait. And, you know, and I can't tell you the hundreds of emails that went back and forth between Faith's mom and me. You know, and I look at that, I'm like, your average person just doesn't have a coach like that.
That's
you know what I mean?
Right.
For themselves.
That's
for,
right. For anything.
And it takes a village, right? I mean, to like.
Absolutely.
And so I look at this and I'm thinking how much handholding went on during this 12-week time. And yes, we successfully, you know, she successfully lost, what, 11% of her body weight or something. I mean, she did a good job. But it's like, without that kind of support, I think she would have quit. The first, maybe second plateau we hit. With weeks, 3 weeks in a row of no weight loss, she would have just been done. Hands, you know, done this diet.
Right,
work,
because
we're
you see,
on to the
you
next.
See the pleading, hungry eyes, and you're having
right.
to count every, practically every piece of kibble.
Right.
And we have to say to Halo that their healthy weight food, healthy weight dry food, which is what I now feed both of my dogs, even young Maisie, who now is only 18 months old, and all my friends who use Halo because now they understand why it's so much better than other foods based on the ingredients. So I have lots of friends that get it. They actually sometimes have pet stores, even specialty pet stores that don't carry it. There's so mm-hmm. many brands that exist. They'll buy it online directly from Halo. And that food is really... I can tell from my dogs who eat it. It's nourishing, it's satisfying, it's tasty, but it is helping keep the weight off, and it's certainly not packing it on. And Halo also gives whoever we choose to be a participant cans of Halo Spot Stew, which is super delicious and pricey and fancy. And Dr. Donna figures out how much of that your dog can eat along with how much kibble. And then she comes up with vegetable and maybe sometimes fruit snacks that you can use, or rice cakes. I want to ask you about rice cakes in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody out there that has a dog that's even just 8 pounds overweight, you think, well, it's only 8 pounds. Those are the people that need the hand holding the most.
Right.
So write to us at radiopetlady@gmail.com. All we need to know is tell us about your dog, age, weight now, what the breed is, if there's a breed involved, and if you can tell us the weight at age two. Because Dr. Donna's figured out that 2 years old, that's probably, unless you got, you know, unless you were a feral dog that was abandoned or you were a fatso and you were already an Ottoman, that's probably your fighting weight. And she's yeah. going to help you get back down to it. I must say that I was both lucky and unlucky because my darling Teddy, the Weimaraner, who, as we know, wound up dying of the horrible liver cancer, lymphoma that then was in the liver. And I wonder if the weight gain somehow was some crazy response to whatever was going on in his body for a long
right.
time without me knowing it. He lost 28 pounds with you, Dr. Donna.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel for Faith. She's killing herself for 8 pounds. He had gained so much insane excessive weight right in front of my eyes.
Right.
28 pounds. And he
mm-hmm.
was still a big, big dog at 98 mm-hmm. pounds. So it's amazing the range of weight loss that a dog can need to achieve and how important the intervention of a specialist handholder like Dr. Donna can be to help you figure out the calories, not guesstimate. That's the thing, Donna. Not guesstimate, but estimate on actual calories in, calories out. Right?
Yep. Yep, absolutely. And it is a lot of work.
It is.
And so, you know, having someone kind of work with you to do that is key. And I'm so passionate about it now that, you know, I encourage everyone, if you really are serious about weight loss, I mean, and have tried multiple diets. I mean, I hear the same shtick all the time. You know, my dog, I can't get him to lose weight. We've been on this food, nothing's working. You know, I would love to help. I would love to help.
So. And you reach Dr. Donna through radiopetlady@gmail.com. If we pick you for the challenge and don't think, no sense my writing, there's probably a really fat pug out there who's going to, you know, be chosen. We'd love to have lots of you. So don't be bashful. And the other thing is, I just really am frustrated when people are told, just ask your vet. Well, your vet's going to sell you a $78 bag of dry food that is made by a company that puts a lot of chemicals in it and reduces a lot of, if there ever was, quality ingredients in it. They're not in it because it's got a lot of kind of indigestible fibers and not much else. That's a fact. If you look at what Dr. Sean Delaney calls the declaration panel of ingredients.
Right.
And you're paying top dollar for these chemically manipulated foods, which are called weight loss foods,
right,
which so many dogs won't eat them. They don't taste good. Or people wind up not even figuring out how to give the right number of calories. Mm-hmm. So they're even giving too much of that stuff. And the dogs don't lose weight on it.
Right.
And then or the opposite. They're like, okay, I have a 3-year-old or a 5-year-old lab who's, I think, is maybe 10 pounds overweight, which means he's probably 20 pounds overweight. I'll feed only 2 cups a day. Okay, right. I'll feed only 1 cup a day. There was a person giving half a cup per meal. It's like, oh my God, the dog's totally starving. He's in starvation mode. He stopped burning any fat at all, right?
Right, right.
You got to use a delicious, tasty food, but you really do need a professional to help you figure out exactly how much. And Dr. Donna is a very good drill sergeant. There's no, I gave a scoop. No, the scoop is nothing. You get a measuring cup and it's got to be level and it's got to be the exact amount she tells you. How do you feel about rice cakes as a snack?
Well,
a dog.
Your average rice cake, and you know me, I'm the calorie
counter.
I know,
you're so crazy good at this.
The average rice cake has about 35 calories. So if you have a 100-pound dog, you know, who a 35-calorie snack, because, again, it's crunchy and it's not, you know.
I break it into pieces. I break it into many pieces. And for Maisie, I do it because of her. She has that, what's it called, fiber-responsive diarrhea. So she has to have very high fiber in her diet, which you figured out the diet, which was amazing. So to me, it's like a treat I can give her that's not high calorie but seems to, you know, be neutral in that fiber digestion. Area, I'll break one rice cake into at least 6 pieces.
Yeah. And that's fine. I mean, so it's, you know, just keeping in count, a whole cake is about 35 calories.
I see.
And so for people who are dealing with dogs that are needing to lose weight, let's just say, for example, you know, your dog needs to weigh around 50 pounds. Well, you know, no more that probably should be eating around 500 calories. And so a 35 calorie rice cake is going to be, you know, 7% of those daily calories.
No nutrition.
Right. So it's all relative to how many calories you can take in and how you want to spend those calories. But if your dog loves that crunch and you toss a cake, it's fine. You just need to account for the 35 calories.
And break it into 6 pieces.
Right.
That's the other idea. So, I mean, you can give a Halo Live a little. You can give any of the marvelous freeze-dried protein treats that they have because they're already fairly small to begin with. But first of all, those are expensive, so I like to save them for when I'm really training.
Sure.
And not just when she's looking eager while I'm, you know, cooking up something that smells delicious that is not destined for her. Give her something.
Exactly.
As a piece of a rice cake will do. Dr. Donna, this is all great advice. I'm hoping that we'll find some more people for the Halo Healthy Weight Challenge. You get free food for 3 months and Dr. Donna's hand-holding and calculations. It's a deal you should not be passing up. RadioPetLady@gmail.com is how you reach us. Thank you all for listening, Donna. Thank you for all you're doing for all of our walking Ottomans and others. Very appreciative.
Okay, thank you. Take care.